I'm Barbara Lee, and we're going to be talking today about reaching out to minister more effectively, or putting it another way, making connections that count. To minister, what does that mean? I think one of the things we're talking about here is reaching out to each other in a way that is serving each other in a way that is not menial. And that's a very intimate, personal, devoted kind of service. And I think that's what, in many ways, God wants from us. God seems to be calling us out of our traditions to a kind of creativity, to make connections with people. And God is in that power. Gives us the strength and the oomph to do whatever it is we have to do. I think specifically back in the civil rights movement. And through the civil rights movement came integration. But it was through the Black Power movement that the Black folks were able to understand their own dignity and their own strength. And even though they were in a society that in many ways discredited them, it was people like you and like me who probably weren't as positive in our attitudes as we could have been that didn't help a whole lot. And it was also the social system. And it was our theology where blackness essentially many times means evil and lightness and goodness means something totally different. But the gospel comes to us through people of color. The gospel comes to us when we realize that, you know, when we call a black person or an Asian person or a Hispanic person a minority, it really shows our own unconsciousness or lack of consciousness, because we as whites are really only 10% of the world's population. And so in effect, we are the minority, although we don't see it right here where we are. But I think in reaching out, we have to look at our own strengths and our own weaknesses and biases. And sometimes those connections that we make involve sacrifice. Christ, of course, made the most impressive sacrifice on the cross, but maybe we too have to have some kind of provide, we may give, have to be called to radical sacrifice in some other kind of way. I think perhaps about how we reach out. We think in reaching out more effectively, we have to do it in some dynamic way. But primarily it's through relationships. You know, there might be, for instance, in my community, there's a person living next door who's Roman Catholic. And how easy it would be for me to drop her off at St. Luke's, the Catholic church down the street, on my way to our congregation in the morning. Perhaps somebody else could give her a ride home because I'm at church for 4 hours in the morning. But how often could we do that? Or how often could we say hello to the person sitting down at the local cafe who's always alone on the stool down at the end, you know? Or how often could we share a visit with that person we know never gets a visit, or at least not very often? Or how often could we send a thank you note? Maybe it's to the person who fixed the washing machine last week, but just to tell him how much we appreciated, you know, his bounciness, or not only the competent way in which he did his job, but his friendliness or the cheer that he brought into the house. And it may not just be the service person who comes to the house. How about, you know, the mailman? Sometimes we think about the mailman, a mail person, or whatever.
Christmas usually.
But just to share our thanks with somebody is reaching out in a way that so many of us just simply take for granted. I recall the first year I was at seminary, there was a young woman there who I really didn't know. But the second year of my seminary experience, she was no longer there. And I really missed her. Because as we passed on campus, she'd always smile and say, "Good morning." And I'd say, "Good morning." And I really never even knew her. But I missed her when she was gone. And in the village right now, there is a person who I've just met, but whose sparkling eyes and whose smile can make me feel like I'm soaring like an eagle. And it's just another human being who, in some small but incredibly impressive way, is making a connection that counts. And you know, many of you have done that for those of us who are on staff as well. You may be here a short period of time, but that's an important time. And there are connections that really, really count and that will impact our lives and be with us for a long time. You know, I think particularly in these times of unemployment, things that we could do that might make a difference. In our community, it's a large community. You could help someone even look through the ads in the newspapers. It sounds mundane, it sounds blah, but it's important. Not only that, you can keep your ears open to tell them what you hear. Maybe you're caring for the children while they go for an interview. Or perhaps you're supportive through prayer. Or in sharing a meal, be it leftovers or something special. Or how many times have any of us even thought to, you know, slip somebody a few dollars at night, some night, so that this family who is worried and uneasy about not having a job can take their kids and go to McDonald's or Burger King. You know, maybe they're the ones who need the night out, that night of recreation, more than we do. They're little things, but it's reaching out and making some connections that really seem to count. But what about with disabled folks or elderly folks? Maybe some of you have neighbors that can't get out to buy their own groceries. Just taking someone for groceries once a week is a real, real service. Or just saying hello to that person that is not very pleasant to be around. Do you all know somebody like that? They probably aren't pleasant. They don't know how to ask for your friendship, how to maintain it, or certainly how to sustain it. Those aren't the easy people to be friendly with. But maybe that's just the person that we're called to reach out to and to contact. That person sitting alone. I think of an experience as a child. There was a young boy, I think his name was Gary. He was in my elementary school class. He always came to school in tattered clothing. He smelled. He was not terribly bright. I can remember taking the bus somewhere and going past his home on the outskirts of our community, and it was a two-story house that tilted, and it had, I'm sure, not a speck of paint on it. And I remember one day Gary came to school and he had been sprayed by a skunk, so obviously he smelled worse than he normally did. And I can remember that none of us wanted to play with him. None of us wanted to talk with him. And to this day, I wonder where he is, and I wish desperately, that I had had the decency to play with him and to have him as my friend. So the truth is, there are people we normally don't like to associate with, for whatever the reason. Maybe those are exactly the people, or we should try and somehow reach out to make contact and make some connections in order to minister effectively. I guess I'm sharing some more reflections, because I'll tell you about the Thanksgiving at my grandparents' home. They had just moved from a huge 7-bedroom house, and all the family was coming, and now they were living in a rented 2-bedroom place down the street. And my grandfather was kind of a character. He really was. And anyway, to make a long story a little bit shorter, there were 32 of us there for Thanksgiving that year. And the table was set in the dining room, and there were 3 card tables in the living room, one even in the bigger bedroom. And I can remember vividly my grandmother and my mother and my aunt standing there and saying, well, now there are 4 Hogcocks, and there are 8 Leislets, and there are 4 Lees, and there are whatever, and we finally got to 32. Yes, there were enough plates on the table, and they had done it all right. And about 10 minutes before we were to eat, Grandpa came to the dining room, and he always stood with his hands as rich as like this, and he looked, and he said, we're short one place. And so my mother and my aunt and my grandmother all came out, and they went through this routine again. There are 4 Hogcocks, and there are 8 Leislets, and there are 4 Lees, and there are the Haldersons, and there are... No, Grandpa, I think we have it. No? No, he says, I think we're one short. And pretty soon, those of us kids who were in the living room looked out, and here walking up the front sidewalk was Chief Little White Cloud. The chief was about 84 years old at the time. He was not particularly clean. He had on, I remember it was a gray flannel plaid shirt. And he had greasy, long greasy gray hair. And in his hand was about an 8-foot sapling. And his face is like those pictures you see of Native Americans. Very, very wrinkled and very, very brown and gorgeous. And he came to the front door, and my grandfather went and welcomed him. The point is, my grandfather had invited him and hadn't told anybody, because this was Thanksgiving, and this was a family event. I mean, it was always just simply family. The chief came in, he went immediately to the dining room table. He sat down because it was very close to mealtime and much of the food was already on the table. He ate all the mashed potatoes. The rest of us weren't all at the tables. In fact, we kids never did get card tables. And he ate what he wanted to, and finally people kind of sat around him, and my grandfather quietly sat in his place at the end of the table, kind of his head down. And finally my grandfather gave the blessing, and the chief continued to eat. And all of a sudden, he started telling stories of lame duck and running deer. And I can remember how awed I was by this man's beauty. I mean, this was a Thanksgiving like none of us had ever spent. We always were in this traditional form where you sat down and you said the blessing and you passed the food and you had your manners. Well, people weren't even at the table, but all the mashed potatoes were gone, and all these other things were happening. And as soon as the chief finished eating, he got up and he went in the living room, and all the little kids followed him. Embarrassingly, the 2 little ones went like this, Indian, Indian. They'd only seen Indians on television. But we went out there, and he started a celebratory dance, which was marvelous. It was that kind of thing, and his dance. And as he did it, and as the little kids joined him, the milk from the card tables in the living room all went on the carpet and the floor. There were 3 glasses that just went boom. And I can remember looking at my mother. It was this horrified look. Anyway, we did this dance, and as soon as the chief had come, he was gone. The rest of us hadn't even sat down at the table, we kids. And I'll never forget that Thanksgiving, ever in my whole life. Grandpa had reached out to his friend, who was lonely, and had invited him to share in our Thanksgiving. It's celebration. And what had really happened was that he had made Thanksgiving very real to us in a new and different kind of way. He was making a connection for us that counted. And I hope we and our family have learned that, you know, holidays are no longer just for family. They are no longer just for the in crowd. We can reach out, and it can be meaningful, and it can be beautiful, and it can be good. The test of the living God is in making connections that count. I think those of us in the church must see ourselves as those whom God has called to life abundant. And I think it's important that we try and translate what we may think of as private or public pain into public issues. For instance, incest. At least one in every five children in our country are victims of incest. At least one of every two marriages includes the acting out of violence in some way or another by one or the other partner. And if we don't think these children and these adults are members of our own congregations, are members of our own community, I think that we're much misinformed. And yet the church continues to talk about the beauty and joy of family life. And as we preach, we kind of romanticize family relationships. And we think we're telling the good news to people in the pews. And the truth is, people need help. And the family is not always such a loving arena. And some of us, maybe we're at our worst within our families. So how can we minister more effectively? How can we reach out to the whole person? You know, maybe it's the person who's sitting next to you right now. Or perhaps it's your next door neighbor. Maybe it's a member of your church staff. Church staff aren't immune from pain. Or the elderly person down the road, or your child's playmate. I think what we have to do is be free enough and listen to that inner calling within ourselves to give our full attention to people, to be open to them, to perceive their feelings and their views. Maybe we even have to suspend our own judgment moment by moment. We need to take that other person's position for a moment, and maybe we have to make a commitment to listening to them, to feeling with them, to being with them. I think the concept of mission within our Lutheran Church is in reaching out to help others because God first reached out to touch us. And sometimes we have to swallow our pride and let others minister to us as well. I think it was about 2 years ago at Easter that I had literally 13 cents to my name, period. Amen. That was it. And I went to the mail the Saturday before Easter, and there was an Easter card, and I opened it up. It was a pleasant one. It was yellow. It was one that shaped like an egg, you know, and had a duck on it. On the inside, it just said, Happy Easter. But as I opened it up, $30 fell out on my lap. And in typing on the inside of the card, it said, Happy Easter from some seminary friends who ain't no good at typing. Here it was. To this day, I have no idea who it was from. None. This last year, has not been a whole lot better financially for me. But I received a note in the mail from someone that had a check in it. And she closed her note by saying something like this. She says, I wanted to share what I had with you. And she says, I want you to know that this is a way that God touches us both. The point is, although we like to give, and we want to give, and it makes us feel good to give, sometimes we too are the receivers. We have to be humble enough to also receive. Because God comes to us in many, many ways. I'm wondering, as we reach out one to another to minister effectively and to make connections that count, how you people can share with each other and with me today. Ways that either you have been ministered to or that you can minister with others so that we can make real connections that count. They don't have to be big ways. I told someone last evening, I talked with a friend till late into the night, and I said, you don't know, just as we share some time together, how much it means. You know, whether it be in the cafeteria or in Vespers or whatever, I will look over and all you do is point, and I know where we are in the dinner or where we are in whatever. I said, do you know what that means? Well, it's no big thing. Yes, it is. That is a big thing. It might just be a look. It might just be a smile. Might be the sparkly eyes. It might be a touch. But these are the things that count. They're little, but they're so incredibly big. Can we share with each other what other ways we can go about doing this? The way people have ministered to us.
I had a dear friend in Seguin who teaches at TLC, does counseling. And when my husband was so ill for such a long time, she'd call me and she'd say, Eleanor, I think you need a good laugh today. And she'd tell me some funny little incident story that lit up my day. You know, it was something I needed. Everything was so grim, but that she brought laughter into my life.
And wasn't it important?
Oh, and it didn't take her 2 minutes to call me, but she did it. That's the thing. You have lots of good intentions along life's way, but do it.
It's that kind of relationship that just is so
precious.
There was a time about 3 years ago when I was in Africa and we were in a real remote area, and there was a lot of really hard things going on in my life. I was pregnant, and we weren't sure if the baby was going to be born and whether I could make it through the pregnancy. And I had to leave Africa and leave my husband. And it was just a really hard time. And one day, I just needed, desperately, I needed someone to talk to. But there weren't too many people around at the time who could understand where I was coming from. And Jonathan, my oldest, was just about 1.5. And I went into his room and I just sat down to watch him play. And he was playing. And then he looked up at me and he said, Mommy, tummy hurt? And I said, no, Jonathan. Head hurt. No, Jonathan. He climbed up in my lap and he said, Mommy, need hug. And so he gave me a hug. And then he said, I know, eat cookies. And we went and had cookies. And you know, just in that, his reaching out to me, you know, it just took the load, just really took the load.
I had an experience a few years ago when I was between jobs and I moved back to California. And someone I remember from my childhood when we first had moved to Davis, and she and her husband had been childless, and they would come home on Sunday sometimes and take her whole family up to lunch. And she had just lost her husband. And I don't know what motivated me that day to just ride my bike over and say hello to her, but I was between jobs, and every other day or every day I'd go over there, it was all the little things, preparing the Medicare and Medi-Cal forms, submitting all those things when you're in so much grief, driving into Sacramento to file the death certificate with everyone who needed to know for sure, and just saying, I'll drive you, come on in, let's go. And I really know it was the Lord working with me, because I wouldn't have rationalized that I could have been of help, and yet that was a time when it really was needed, and no one else thought of doing those little mundane things that had to be done.
And those are the most important things. Those are making connections that we really count.
And all those that sit alone in the nursing homes that don't have any visitors all year long, maybe, for one reason or another. Oh, how they desperately need us to say hello, visit with them a little bit. They just cling to you. They are so lonely. Very for the pets would come on.
My neighbor tells of going to visit her husband in the nursing home. He's been there 7 years. And she said there's a man living next door today who's always screaming, always screaming. And she's a very lovely lady, and she dresses nicely. And I don't know, I think she's about 70 years old, and she looks like she walked out of old. Now how those two come together, I don't know, but she really does. Anyway, she goes in and she said, I decided that instead of listening to him scream, I would go up and say hello. And when I brought my husband something from the garden or a rose, I would bring one to him. And she said, I decided to give him a hug one day. And she said, he quit screaming. And she said, every time I go in, he's screaming, but I go in, I give him a hug, I spend no more than 5 minutes with him. And she said, he is just calm and relaxed. And it makes a difference. She had never met the man. And those are just little things. Some of you.
You bring up about the institutionalized, and it's very well you do. And you mentioned, Elder mentioned laughter, but also we have seen in many nursing homes people that are just waiting to die, and nobody comes and sees them, even if the family is not too far away. So there's a lot of lonely people there. And that's why we've started our visitation program with animals, and also placement, which has made a lot of difference in it. And you mentioned laughter. I mean, it's probably the best therapy we can get today. I remember all the bad things I've done in ignoring some of the ones that you mentioned. You know, you had these people in your class in lower grades that weren't very smart or poorly dressed, and they were outcasts. But you also like to think of the ones you might have helped, and I guess I still have a warm feeling about that. Because I think my folks said you're going to be kind to Erling. Erling wasn't like the rest of the boys in our school, and we were ordered to be kind to Erling, and to go over and play with him on Saturdays and defend him. I got in a few fights on that when I was young, but we were kind to Erling, and then the war came, and he was older than I, and he was the youngest in the family, and they institutionalized him during the war, and so after the war, I went out to this institution in, by Buckley in Western Washington to see him and take him out for a ride. And I had no other person that was in charge there in the programs, and so I kept track of her. And I took him out for a ride, and it was fortunate because he didn't live long after that. But the one part of this is that whenever I appeared within driving distance of his older sister, and before that his mother before she died, they'd always show up, and they'd always ask, "Well, you don't remember me?" Well, that could happen within the last month. I appeared, and there was his older sister, because they knew that we had been kind to early, and I think that's the reason they showed up. But I looked at these people, and we have been in institutions, mental institutions, now in prisons, and it's a lonely group out there that nobody comes to see.
I think when I was nursing, that one of the things I could do besides just going in and giving care was to touch someone, just a hand on an arm, just the simplest thing to let them know you came. And so often couldn't speak to them in the manner they needed, perhaps.
Oh, truly, but touching is really important. And how often it's the people who, often it's the people who are disabled. I notice it, I'm sure your wife notices it. Somebody else was mentioning it today. If they don't know me or if they don't know her, knowing that we are deaf, they will try and they will be somehow uncomfortable in trying to talk because they don't know if we will respond or how we will respond or whatever. And it's that not only is there that incredibly sometimes difficult to cope with isolation of silence, but there are the people who withdraw because they're afraid to reach out. But it's not only people with deafness, that's an invisible disability, but it's people in chairs and wheelchairs. It's people who have other kinds of disabilities, and people don't know how to reach out, and so they just ignore.
They don't know how to cope with that. They just don't know how to cope with someone else's.
And if only we could reach out.
We have a boy in our neighborhood. There aren't many children, but he's in the eighth grade, and he told us that his mother and father are going to divorce in a few months, as soon as they can get up enough money for one of them to go back east. And there had been some stealing in the neighborhood, and we all suspected it might have been this boy. But he'd been taking a computer course in school, and so I came over to borrow a disk or something from my kids who were older, about 4 years older, and there wasn't any real rapport there with him other than for that disk. But he was selling some, I don't know what it was, trying to earn a little money for himself. I bought some stationery or something, you know, that type of thing. And I didn't want it, but I thought, if I extend that much to let him know that I had a little faith in his judgment, he said I wouldn't get it for about 6 weeks. That was fine. I'd wait. I thought, well, I'll just wait and see if he really comes through. And he did. I got it, and that's fine. I'll give it as a little gift sometime. But I think I didn't feel at all worried that we would ever lose anything or, you know, from his stealing. So I felt good about being his friend.
You bring up the very important subject of touching. In 81 here, I did a tape on touching, and I've learned something since then. But in all facets, and the reason I looked it up today is that tomorrow a fellow named Ken Erickson is coming here. He has written a very important book called The Power of Praise by Oxburgh. And I recommend it to all of you. I don't know if it's on sale here or not, but and I give it as gifts, and it's a very, very important book. But now, the reason that I was looking up my stuff on touch, because he wants to talk about touch, and I was worried with all the things I got lined up to do, that I'd have to do another tape on touch, and then I'd forgotten I'd done this. So I can give him this tape, because he's going to write a book on touching. There is a very important book written by Montague, Ashley Montague, Ashley Montague wrote a book on touching many years ago, and he updated it in 1978. But he doesn't get into it from the religious standpoint, from theology. There are about 150 references to touching in the Bible, I think. And it's probably one of our most important sensory organs. And when you go and see old people in nursing homes, they want to be touched and to touch. And that's one of the reasons that the animals are ready for this. And men don't touch very much, or we wonder about them if they do, you see. In our culture, in other cultures not so much. But there was a study done in a large veterinary clinic to find out how much men touched versus women, their animals. And a lady went in and with her dog and kept notes and found out that men touch sometimes more than the women, averaged out. In nursing, I counseled with our Dean of Nursing at Washington State University of our regional program in nursing. And I told them that they should not worry so much about technical skills in nursing, but that they ought to pick them on the basis of three or four criteria. One of them is that they knew how to touch. They had a sense of humor and could make the people laugh. And they had compassion. I'm quite fond of measurement for that. And the fourth one was that they'd take care of things on Saturday night when nobody was around to check on them. And if they did that, we'd probably be in better shape than we are now. In fact, it would be a criteria for anyone, I guess.
Last week, I did a session on the Ministry of Touch, which is going to be repeated this week.
Is it? Yeah, and you
I'm going to do it on Thursday evening.
All right, Ken Erickson will be here, and it'd be very important. And also, tell him, and I'll tell him too, that you have a tape. The tape, it's in here, the tape on touching. Right.
And what I was going to share is that there was, at that time, after the session was over, and people were very receptive. Were any of you here? There was a person who came up to me and said, tears streaming down their face, it had been 20 years since they had had a hug, since their spouse had died. And that individual turned to me and through sobs said, if I hear nothing else, if I do nothing else, this whole trip has been worth it. And clung. And touch is so incredibly important. That's why I kind of skipped over it here, because I'm...
Yeah.
It's...
Yeah, you know, touch and affirmation. We spend most of our time infirming, don't we? Rather than affirming. In our society, and especially in science, we're always critiquing instead of constructive criticism. And I'll never forget the stories that Ken Erickson related of two incidents. The first one was in a parish, in a Catholic parish in Yugoslavia. And the altar boy, working with the priest, spilled a cruse of wine while he was preparing it. And the priest became infuriated and denigrated him and bodily and hit him and said, "You leave and never come back." And that person became Marshal Tito of Yugoslavia, communist dictator. In another place, in a Catholic parish, the same thing happened in America. This boy spilled the cruise of wine, and the priest went up to him and put his hand on him and said, "There, you'll make a great priest someday." And that was Bishop Fulton J. Sheen.
Reminds me again of how we are meant to reach out. I have a young friend, he's less than 30, and this occurred when he was 18. I was worshiping for a time in a Catholic charismatic community because of some circumstances that I think is important now. But I had met Greg, and he was just kind of a teenager that was just really fun to be around. And I remember his coming to help me move. He was much younger than I was. And we were talking, and he said, "You know, an interesting thing happened yesterday." He worked in a nursing home for retired priests. And he said, "Yesterday I went in to help Father whatever." And he said, "You know," he said, "get this for me, do that for me." He said, "I need that. You make too much noise when you do this." And he said, then I left his room after trying to be helpful. And this is one of the most saintly young men I'd ever met. He went into the next room, and he said that priest was in a lot of pain and was very close to dying. And he said, "I tried to do what I could for him. I mopped his brow and whatever." And he said, "Thank you, my son." And he went all on. He said, "This man was so different from this man." And they were both, you know, old, retired priests. And he said, "I came out of that, those two rooms." He was working as an orderly. And he said, "I recognized that one day I would be one of those two men." And he said, "Now was the time to get on with it." And at age 18, he recognized that, you know, we can go this way or we can go this way. And now was the time. He was ordained 2 years ago. And he's just a beautiful, beautiful human being. A man with cystic fibrosis who goes through his therapy every day. But of those two men, he made the choice at age 18 which way he chose to go.
He will not have a normal lifespan. He will not have a normal lifespan.
Oh, no. He's lost three sisters from it.
I think it was Al Rognes, who used to be president of with the Theological Seminary, and he was a dear friend of mine. Early on, he said that it is very important that you frequently choose someone to help in which there's no way that they can repay you. There's no way in the world that they can make retribution, and you must do this. I try to tell a lot of people this, and tried to do it myself, I believe. we have to keep reminding ourselves.
We have to keep reminding ourselves, too, that as the ministry of the priesthood of all believers, we all minister one to another. It's not just clergy people. All of us.
There, someone told me one time that there are three natural highs. They're praise, love, and service, which kind of fits in here.
Can we go out from here in this time and in this place after a refreshing kind of time here at home? Can we go out and when we get back to our homes, can we, in some dark corner of our minds, remember when we see that lonely person sitting at the cafe counter? Or that isolated person sitting in the chair, the wheelchair. Or that person who sits in the back row at church and opts out before anybody can shake hands or give them a hug. Can we remember to reach out to those people and to make some connections? You know, they may not, from our point, be very big. I think God calls us to those important kinds of things. Yes.
Somewhere I read about a child who was in Sunday school, and she said that someone told her to look in the mirror, and she had a sour expression. And her little boy said, if you only saw that, you know, that expression, how can you help but be an unwelcome Christian or an unwelcome element in the church, that we should not only in reaching out, but be the pleasant face that shows our love of God so that we can give it to someone else. Our expressions have a great deal to do with what we're saying. We aren't always in control of them, naturally.
My mentor at the seminary told me a story of what happened in one of his first parishes. He said he was standing still up by the altar, and he said people were leaving the church. And he said he saw this young father and a son walking out through the center aisle, and he said he noticed that the father was pointing up to the window, and he thought that might have been kind of an interesting conversation. So later he asked, I don't know if he asked the father or if the father came up to him, and he said, the father explained that the little boy had asked, he said, who are those people up there? And he said, those are the saints. And the little boy said, saints? Oh! Before he got any other chance to say anything, he said, I know who the saints are. Those are the people the sun shines through. You know, S-O-N. Oh. And you know, isn't that the truth?
I have a little verse that came from Scandinavian countries. Living is a thing you do now or never, which do you do?
We have another 5 minutes if we choose to take them, otherwise we can go our way.
I have one cute thing to share. Last, I think it was last weekend, we were having a fundraising thing for our Luther League. We were taking them on a bike trip. And I was never really conscious of how much I touched my children, but I was sitting in a chair and this small person came up to me, just the right height of one of my children. And I was talking and I just unconsciously started to stroke this child's back, and then I put my hand on their bum, you know, because I thought it was one of my kids. And then all of a sudden I thought, that doesn't feel like one of mine. And it wasn't, it was another child. But then I started to realize how much I do touch them and how much children come to me and stand by me. And I just don't think about it, I just touch them a lot. And how they must like that, that must be why they come and, you know, just come right up against me because they love to be robbed. And
yeah, if you would not have been touched, you would not live.
Isn't that true?
It's true
of babies?
Mammals,
yeah,
you know,
mammals, that they aren't touched.
And in many mammals. So.
It's also true of autistic children. There's been quite a big thing done on that, and those an experiment was that one child was left in a crib in isolation, never touched, and he just didn't come out. And the other child, children and young teachers just like you would have just given everything, all their knowledge and touching and caring to them, and they bloomed. In a matter of a year.
Yeah. So many people can relate to that when we've been talking about in each of the groups and how many times we can stroke and pet and how that same person can't reach out to another person. They can give the call to that animal that it's hard for them to go ahead. Unless maybe they can touch a baby, they can touch a person that's infirm, or they can touch an animal, but a person that's strong and healthy and there, that's other person, is it because they're afraid of rejection? What is it?
I suppose there are as many reasons as there are people. But we know that some people can touch more comfortably than others. Some people can receive touch more comfortably than others. Mm-hmm. Those of us who can do it more easily, you know, we're fortunate. But those who can't, we must respect them and accept that from them and then just go forth.
And a lot of it's cultural. In our culture, men, this was very much impressed on me when our daughter Karn died. I didn't keep track of how many women hugged me in comfort, but I remember the men because there weren't that many. There were five. The ones that did it was surprising to me. One of them you might have guessed it, but one of them was the provost of our university, he was a black, who came, left his busy office and came down to see me. I'd only known him a year, if he had been there. But it's easier for the blacks, I think, were raised to do that.
And you know, after permission was given, quote, the other day during this presentation on touch, the woman who works with the tapes came running out into the area out here by the door. She said, "Barbara, look, look." And she opened the door. And all the way up to the patio area, people were hugging.
Yeah.
There had been given permission. There had been given permission to hug, and people have been doing it ever since. Let us go forth and to serve one another. Reach out.
I have to share one more thing.
Yeah.
My son-in-law is a black, and one of the first visits I made into their home, I was quite impressed because I got the best hug I ever thought I would ever receive. He is a very, very, very warm person, and he's a director in of senior citizens in Clear Lake. And I just was very impressed with him, and rather awestruck that. And that's why it's been very easy for me to accept him. And it hasn't been as easy for some others in our family, but we're working on it.
You're all God's children.
Thank you for coming.